Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 245. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's pretty good. I'm just counting down the days of Arizona at this point. It's gotten cold here in South Carolina, which I don't like, so I need some warmer weather. And ready to be out there 2 weeks till we go, and you know, I'm amped. I'm ready to be back at the ballpark, and looking forward to some good warmer weather in Arizona for sure, and some good food at that.
It's funny, like you southern hemisphere, southern part of the country folk, you and one of our guests here, you'd say, it's getting cold. Like me and the other guest, James Anderson, who we'll bring on here in a second, are like just laughing because James is in Wisconsin. I'm in Maine. So it's like, that's a whole nother level of cold up here.
I don't envy you. It was like 60 high today. It was like 45 this morning. So that's cold.
Actually, it was about the same here today. But at the same time, like, I don't envy you like in the summertime. You guys get like super hot and humid. Like, I don't want that. So it's like, there's the trade-off, right? It's different times of the year. But yeah, can't wait to get out there in Arizona. Just hoping it's not as cold as it was. Was that last year or year before?
Last year was cold.
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah, when like the first night, like we're like in sweatshirts and still cold in Arizona. That was just weird. But I'll blame Welsh. But speaking of that, we'll bring on our guest here. Our first guest, like where isn't he these days? Of course, in this league, Prospect One, Fantasy Pros, The Athletic, Fantasy Baseball Today, pod over on CBS. Pretty sure I saw a billboard with his face on it driving to work this morning. Mr. Chris Welsh at Is It the Welsh on Twitter. What's going on, bud?
What's up, buddies? What's up, friends? Yeah, a little oversaturated. A lot of me out there in the AFL as well. So a lot of places, but very happy to be on with you guys, do this and see both those beautiful faces here in 2 weeks. It is. And it's, by the way, It's not cold. It's very hot. It's like 100 degrees still every day. It is going to get to like 85 next week on the high, but it is
perfect right there.
It's a big old 100 right now for the rest of this week.
See, get me in the mid-80s, I'm good. You know, that's great. 100, a little too much. In the last year, in the 50s, not great for a baseball game. But, yeah, 2 weeks, man. And I think you're single-handedly responsible for getting the Diamondbacks to the NLCS.
Well, yeah. Yeah, thanks to me. Thanks to me and my good friend Corbin Carroll. We did the things. Yeah, I mean, I was talking with someone about this. It's just that there's not other Diamondback people, so I'm associated with. Though I did hear one of the John Boy guys is a Diamondback
star. Oh, really?
So I guess that's the other. But yeah, yeah, just I'm out one there. But you know, I'm probably more pessimistic than most people. Like I would say they're probably smarter people that thought the Diamondbacks could go farther than I really thought they could be. I just always thought Corbin Carroll was going to be exponentially better than whatever any projection system said. But yeah, it's very fun. We are going to be done with this recording. I will be going to watch game one, and I'm kind of trying to figure out if I need to go to game three out here in Phoenix, which I really want to do.
Do it. I don't know why you wouldn't, but...
Well, I can think of one reason.
Well, it yes.
3 to 4 figures of money that it might get to. But yeah, other than that, I agree with you. Why wouldn't I?
Cha-ching. Yeah, unfortunately, the other three teams of the other people on here, myself, Chris, and James, not in the dance anymore. But speaking of James, let's bring him on now. Obviously, the lead prospect analyst and senior baseball editor over at RotoWire, and of course, on the RotoWire podcast as well. James, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, guys. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. We did this back on James's show. What was that, James? 2 months ago, a month ago, 6 weeks? I don't remember, something like that. So it'll be fun to see.
It was
how
a
lot.
It was actually a long time ago. I think it was like before any of the draftees had gotten into game action, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, I think that's right.
So we're talking like probably what, mid to late July? We did probably shortly after the draft. Like we did
mid,
that.
Yeah, I think mid to late July, exactly.
My word! So it's been three months since we did that. Wow, I did not think it was that long ago. And the
it's
last
mid-October.
Yeah, I know. What the heck? Yeah, this is time has flown by. But let's get right into it, though. Obviously, hinted at it. We're doing an FYPD mock here. And we'll compare it to the mock draft we did on James's show on RotoWire 3 months ago, apparently. That was so it'd be fun to see how values have changed. We're going to do a little fun thing. Usually, we just like pick a guy, you go first, you go second, etc. But we're doing a little random, like little race here to determine the draft order as I'm trying to put it up on the screen right now, as I should have been better.
Is this
at
a visual cross? Is everybody watching this?
Yeah.
I know the draft order is, but I'm saying the episode.
Not on the podcast, so people are going to be...
Well, then YouTube should probably play like the play-by-play announcers of the race thing, so just get ready to call the horses and see how close, or whatever it is, a 40-yard dash.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Oh, present. There we go.
Who would win if we actually did a race? Who do you think would win?
Not me.
You two or the four of us? Because either way, it's either Clegg or James.
The four of us.
I think it's Clegg or James. Oh, here we go. Share up.
I'm out of shape.
Can you guys see that? Oops.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I put the wrong tab up. Sorry.
Oh, boo.
Amateur hour here.
Ball one. Right,
let me present.
Eric gets the fourth pick by default.
I know, because I'm screwing things up here. Let me just share the entire.
Giving
oh, here we go.
Earned runs, Eric. Mm. Come on.
Here we go. Everyone Maybe. See that? There we go. All right. So I think I forget who was who. Oh, it has their names on there. So no one can see this that's listening, obviously, but we're going to have a little fun with it. Start rush. Good luck. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. All right. Oh, this is slower than I thought. All right. Welsh isn't doing nothing yet.
Welsh hasn't even moved out of the end.
Hasn't even moved.
James is in the early lead.
40-yard line?
Eric,
you set
up
this to extra slow.
This is going to be extra. Oh, Clegg just had a little burst there up to the 20.
I'm probably chilling in the back.
I know. Well, Welsh is going to
hit a burst in a second. There he goes.
There we go.
He just went 5 yards. And
I'm dressed like a cowboy, though, so it's no surprise I'm in the back.
I'm dressed like a Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
James is the Saints, it looks like.
Clegg looks like the 49ers or
I'm
something.
I'm about to take the lead.
I just took the lead. He's almost to the 50.
First one over the 50 is me. But still 50 more yards to go. Oh.
This is the slowest 100-yard dash I've ever seen.
We got.
I think we could run the 100-yard dash quicker than these guys are running.
Oh, absolutely.
I should have burst. I had a little 10-yard burst past Eric.
We're nearing the red zone, almost done. It's Clegg, me, James, and Welsh right now.
I feel
now.
Like I'm going to pull a hammy at the 20 and just fall down.
Yeah,
here we go. It's completely stopped.
Welsh.
James had the early
hot.
Lady.
This is bogus.
Dude, I like this so much better than just randomly picking who's. Clegg.
I'm to the five.
Here I come.
Oh, no.
And I just literally stopped moving.
First pick goes to Clegg.
Right.
What is Clegg doing?
I'm just running floating. All the way through the end zone.
Photo finish for second.
Who's... What is even happening here?
Oh, that was such a tie.
Who got second between me and...
No, I got second.
Welsh got second.
That's bullcrap.
What a comeback.
That's bullcrap. Go back to the photo finish. Here comes James.
James had the early lead, but...
And he's still going. You should put this on the YouTube channel, the amazing race that was.
I'll cut this bar and we'll just post it.
Yeah. And James takes a knee in the end zone there. There we go. So draft order, Clegg, Welsh, myself, and James. There we go. That was fun. Next time, note to self, make it a little quicker than that, but... All right, let's get out of that tab here. All right, so leading things off is Mr. Clegg here. And we had a couple questions here. And I think one, we can kind of work it into kind of like these first few picks here. As one of the questions was, where was it, the one? Yeah, has Langford seemingly leapfrogged Cruz as the slam dunk number one guy? Chris, has he?
Yeah, I think so. I still say that they're probably same tier long term, but... You can't argue with what Langford did performance-wise after, I would say, they were pretty much 1A, 1B in college. You know, everything that Langford did in his college career pretty much was in step with what Cruz did. I mean, you look at the statistics, and you know, Langford had 610 career plate appearances at Florida. He had 47 homers, slash 363, 471, 746. He walked more than he struck out. His 90th percentile EV was actually higher than Cruz in college at 110, which is pretty stellar, despite, you know, obviously aluminum bat, you're going to see a tick down in that. And even, you know, Cruz did have an average EV, but Langford's still quite impressive there. The contact, the plate discipline, everything you want to see is right there. And I mentioned the data, the 90th percentile of 110, like this year with Wood, once he debuted, was 107, so still highly impressive. Major league average is about 103.5. So Langford's already ready to play in the major leagues, in my opinion. I mean, you look at the contact rates, the plate discipline, the exit velocities, just across the board, I think he could be playing in the postseason right now in the ALCS and doing some solid stuff. And we've seen, you know, Evan Carter do it. I think Langford's a better bat, so I wouldn't be surprised if Langford had come up and done this as well, but yeah, he's probably going to be on the opening day roster at this point. And I would say, yeah, I don't think you can take anybody but Langford at one in a FYPD, but it's not a knock on Cruz. I think everybody wants to kind of drop Cruz down significantly, but Cruz still had a really solid year overall.
Let me ask you something though. I don't know. We didn't clarify this before. Are you guys in this draft making Yamamoto available? Because
yes,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So you are. So the only cap, because I agree with this, but I've seen some stuff already that people have gone Yamamoto with a quick number one over anybody else, because when you're getting back to proximity, the stuff plus numbers out there for Yamamoto were really great, and you're talking about, you know, maybe a better command as high strikeout version of Kodai Senga that's coming here, and I think that gets a lot of people excited. So where I agree, Langford has moved himself into that top spot, and begrudgingly too, by the way, because, like, you know, I was a Dylan Cruz guy and still am a Dylan Cruz guy, if I'm being honest, but it's not at the number one spot because it's ridiculous to ignore what Langford did. Everything Langford did was top notch. I still love Dylan Cruz, but I think there's a large sect of people that are going to look at Yamamoto and what he's going to do the entire season, the production, and maybe even in like a points format might view him a little bit higher. So I think there might be a little bit of volatility at the top, though Langford should probably be the top guy. And I was also just asking if Yamamoto is going to be available.
Yeah,
in this.
Yeah. Well, we should have clarified that, but yes, we will definitely have Yamamoto in it.
Okay. There you go.
Is that who you were going with it too, Welsh?
Oh, did we do official picks? I didn't know if Clegg officially picked.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Officially picked Wyatt Langford.
Okay. Officially picked Wyatt Langford. Oh, man. I actually wouldn't have minded to have three or four here because then I could have just taken the best of what's coming back. I actually think the four is really strong. Yamamoto is a now production player, and in Dynasty, taking on like pitchers in general, I kind of just don't want to do. I love Paul Skeens. I know the shape issues are kind of out there. I did hear an interesting thing just real quick on Skeens. It was, let's just say a big hitter who we're going to draft here who was in the College World Series who mentioned that Ty Floyd was actually the nastiest of the LSU pitchers and mentioned the shade that was a real big problem over there and something that, you know, because we're always talking about like shape with Paul Skeens and that, you know, Skeens' velocity with some shadow issues were able to mask maybe some of that stuff that we don't see, you know, that we're all just analytically looking at with the shape of his fastball and stuff, and it just made it play better. So just throwing that to Skeens, but I love Skeens. I can't not take Dylan Cruz here. I'm going to take Dylan Cruz, and I think I talked about this probably in the middle of the season with James, where I think we were talking about like Langford and Cruz, and I just don't see myself coming off of that for a pitcher, whether it's Skeens or Yamamoto, though I think Yamamoto is going to be like incredibly productive and is going to be really good. And I'm going to be eating my words if he's better. Like, look at where Senga's at right now and what he just pulled off. If he's able to beat those expectations, you might be looking at Yamamoto as like a top 20 pitcher. But if we're looking at it from the Dynasty perspective, I want to invest in the bat. I believe, like you, Clegg, that Dylan Cruz is in the same tier as Langford, and I know that is not a unanimous decision, and I kind of get it from a lot of people of why Langford might be in his own tier, but Dylan Cruz put up big EVs in college as well, huge contact rate, opposite field EVs too. I remember in the College World Series putting up 107s opposite field, and he had a pretty good debut, 292, homer, stolen bases. Maybe it might be one of my biggest worries is if he's going to be maybe a better real-life player than it is going to translate to fantasy. Like, Langford might be an absurd counting stats type of guy, where Dylan Cruz just might be that solid 20, 300, 95, 95, or 90, 90 type of player. But I believe in his ability to hit. I believe in the hard hit. He's running a bit, which is kind of nice to see. And outside of his double-A stint, which was kind of a struggle, I still think he's like an elite prospect. So he's top 10. I'm going to go with Dylan Cruz here.
I was really hoping you wouldn't, just to make my decision here at three a little easier, because now I got to pick between these two arms here. I will go with Yoshinobu and Yamamoto here at number three. You know, I'm usually one to shy away from, especially in the first few picks, taking like, you know, whenever a big name comes over. But usually that's the case when they're like, you know, later in the, like late 20s or even like, you know, 30. Like, we've seen some of these names coming over the last handful of years, but Yamamoto is only 20. He's 24. Actually, he just turned 25 a couple of months ago, so he'll be 25 for most of next season as well. So you're still getting like a lot of the prime years. Like, he's not even really in his, you know, prime yet. Again, still only 25 years old, and he's absolutely dominated. Like, better than really any. This might be the, like, in terms of all the pitchers that come over. Like, you could maybe make an argument he's had like the best career in Japan before coming over. You look at the last three seasons, ERA under 1.7. Just insane. Like, you know, the ability to miss bats, limit the walks, you know, the three pitch mix, fastball, splitter, curveball, all phenomenal pitches, commands them all very well. Doesn't give up home runs. Like, everything you could want from, you know, like an ace caliber pitcher, he's kind of checks off all those boxes. That's going to be fun to see where he lands. Probably only really five or six teams that'll probably be in the running that can, you know, he pony up the money to get a guy like Yamamoto. So it'll be interesting to see where he does land, but wherever he does, I think it's obviously going to be one of the, you know, top, I don't know, top whatever pitchers in baseball, but he's going to be an impact arm right away. I think I have a high, you know, high hopes for him right away. And, you know, Tim McLeod, who is very in touch with, you know, that area of the world with baseball, has been kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, drooling over Yamamoto. And I think he'd agree with that for the last few years, and says nothing but glowing things about him. You watch him pitch, like, this guy looks like a stud. So I feel okay taking him here at three. Yeah, maybe even at two. If I'm number one, I'm going Langford, no doubt. Like, I have, you know, Langford, the combination of power, speed, contact, approach, proximity. You know, that's why he's my number one overall for all prospects, not just FYPD. At two, you know, that'd be a real tough decision. I don't know if I have any number two picks. I have a number three pick in an FYPD, but that's it. So that'd be tough over Cruz or Yamamoto. But here at three, I'll take Yamamoto. over to James for four.
Okay, I'll take Walker Jenkins. He's my number two guy in this class. I prefer to go hitting over pitching in FYPD, and I think Jenkins, like, he just blew me away in his debut. Like, the data's excellent. He had better data at single A than Cruz did, and he's 3 years younger. And I just think he jumps on video as well. He reminds me a little bit of like when Marcelo Meyer went over Jordan Lawler. At the time, it seemed like it was kind of a toss-up. And then once I saw Lawler play in pro ball, like, it was just kind of clear that he should have been the guy. That's kind of how I feel about Jenkins versus Max Clark among the two prep outfielders. And I think he's got just an incredibly high floor for a player his age and an incredibly high ceiling. So love getting Jenkins here at four.
Yeah, can't go wrong with that at four. We're snaking now, so back around to James for five. Are you going pitcher here with Skeens at five? I know you just say you don't like taking pitching. Are you going another hitter?
Yeah, no, I'll go Skeens. I think he's about as good of a pitching prospect to come through the draft since any of us have been covering it. Just very, very rare that I would rank any pitching prospect as high as I've got Skeens ranked. He's barely pitched in pro ball. I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what the Pirates do with him next year. You know, I think it's probably likely that he looks like one of their three or four best starters in spring training. And I don't really think there's going to be much of a, you know, they'll be careful with him next year, but there's not going to be like some sort of hard, like 140 inning cap or anything. So I'm really interested to see if he can break camp. You know, they could definitely go the safe route and kind of send him to the minors for, you know, 5 to 10 starts. But I kind of think he could kick the door down in the spring. So that's what I'm most focused on with Skeens. I really hope he stays healthy, obviously. But there's just an incredibly high ceiling. And I think he spends at least 3 or 4 months in the majors next year.
Now, do you have any concern with him being in Pittsburgh? Obviously, Mitch Keller has worked out eventually. But really, you know, obviously they had Garrett Cole, but, you know, he left town. For the most part, Pittsburgh hasn't been the greatest with, you know, pitching development. Does that kind of make you a little bit cautious about Skeens at all?
No, I don't have any second guessing. Like, I think what Bubba Chandler and Jared Jones did this year is very, very impressive. Like, I think Chandler and Jones are both top 10 pitching prospects in their own right. So I'm not that worried about that. And it's a good home park. I think eventually it'll be a pretty solid defense behind him. So not worried about that.
Cool. Yeah, that's definitely fair. All right. Back to me for pick six. This is tough. I'm between two bats here. And I know the one I'm not going to take is going to go within the next two picks. As if Welsh doesn't take him, I know Clegg's going to take him. So, but I'll go Max Clark here, pick six. So I actually had initially ahead of Jenkins. I've moved Jenkins ahead over the last couple of months, but that's really no knock on Clark. I think there's star upside here with Clark. Like, Chris and I talked with him. I don't remember when it was at this point, but, you know, he checks off all the boxes, like, even off the field. Like, this guy seems like he's a gamer, has his head on right, like, has that drive that you love to see. And obviously all the, you know, skills on the field. Like, this guy, you know, almost walked as much as he struck out in 23 games. That was impressive to see. Even if he did struggle pretty mightily in low A Lakeland after getting promoted from the complex level. You know, there's plus or to double plus speed here. He's one of the better pure hitting, you know, prep bats in the draft class. We'll see how that translates as he moves up through the ranks in the Detroit system. And I think there's going to be some power, you know, projection here and some, you know, increased power in the next few years. Is he going to be like a 30 home run guy? No, probably not. But could he get up to 20? Sure. I could definitely see him getting up into that range and being like a well-rounded offensive talent. The guy can get you maybe flirt with like some 20-30 seasons or something like that with, you know, solid average and OBP as well. So I will go Max Clark here at six. And then we go to, actually, no, Clegg's at seven. So I already know who Clegg's going to take here. See if I'm right.
No, it's Welsh.
Oh, it is Welsh. Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, this is
too many Chris's on one podcast.
Super easy pick for me. This is my number four guy overall. I'm going to go with Matt Shaw.
Yeah, that's who I was alluding to.
That was my fourth overall guy, too.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I knew he wasn't getting past, you know, Clegg at eight.
I would have taken Max Clark, but I kind of think there might be a tier difference, too. Not just, like, pinpointing, like, Clark's whatever struggles that in the league. I don't want to even make a big deal about any of that because I think the intangibles are really great. But Matt Shaw is also one of those players that not only the intangibles are great, but what he did from a production standpoint was bonkers in 157 at-bats, 8 homers, 15 stolen bases, hit 357 this past year, moving a couple levels. In August in South Bend, he hit 393 with 4 homers and 7 stolen bases, and then hit 309 in September, moving up into Tennessee. I mean, he's an absurd bat, makes it really easy too. I love his approach. I don't think there's too much going on in the approach. It's incredible bat speed. He's aggressive on the base paths. And I remember in the pre-draft process, for some reason, I got very honed in on comparing Tommy Troy and Matt Shaw together and kind of pinpoint a little bit smaller, kind of stockier guys that can run and have power. And the thing that stood out, and I mentioned that like as a sometimes Homer Diamondback fan who enjoys Tommy Troy. And I was excited to get Tommy Troy because he was one of those players that kind of stood out from some of the back end analytics, really big hard hit numbers in college, really good barrel rate. And the Diamondbacks kind of purposefully made picks of players that popped as far as barrel rate and max exit velocity. But Matt Shaw was a player that I couldn't get over who also fed all of those. But I thought the power potential was bigger. And he had one of the better pro debuts of, I'd say, of a draft pick in quite some time. I mean, Langford led the way with 10 homers over anybody, but he came in with a almost 5% home run overall percentage, and he was an extra base monster as well. I think Matt Shaw could really be a special player, and I worry sometimes, but it's probably more past where you go and you look, like on my prospect list, I look and then I see like the guys that are first year player, and I'm like, ooh, it's a little too many guys I got here up at the top. Like that's gonna burn. You know, it always feels like it burns us. But Matt Shaw is one of those players that I consistently move up and up. I'm very excited about him. And I think there is a legit shot that we could see him early this coming year. Because if you want to take a look at how teams have aggressively approached their prospects and we want to start pinpointing some of these guys, yes, I think a vast majority of these draft players moved up levels, not because they were ready, but it was because of at-bats. Like teams clearly did that. Like Dylan Cruz was not ready, jumped up to Double-A, nor did half of these guys need to come up to Triple-A who just got drafted. But it's some of the guys that, you know, heeded the call immediately, and Matt Shaw was one of those players. So I would expect him to probably break camp in Double-A, but it could be really fast rising. And pending what this team does from a roster construction standpoint, I don't think it's ridiculous to say this is a guy that helps that team sooner rather than later, vies for a Rookie of the Year spot. And he's a huge fantasy asset on all points, 5 tools. So Matt Shaw, pretty easy pick here.
Yeah, I've been home run pick for me too. I've got him 4th overall. Echo everything you said. Love Matt Shaw. I'm going to go the pitching well because I love Hurston Waldrop. No homerism here from a Braves fan, but I think Waldrop has the stuff to, like we said with Shaw, I think Waldrop could ultimately break camp with the team next year. There was rumors that he was coming up at the end of this year, actually, and I almost wonder if the Braves wish they had just given him a shot and seen what had happened after, you know, their collapse and falling out against the Phillies. But Waldrop, just nasty stuff top to bottom. When the fastball is working and missing bats, you know, everything else works. He's fastball up to 97 this year. Splitter falls off the face of the earth. I mean, the splitter arguably might be the best splitter in baseball. I mean, it's insane to just watch it. And you look at the analytics on it, and it's so, so good. And then the slider, when it's on, I think the slider's plus pitch as well. So, you know, Waldrop mixes those pitches extremely well. He gets the job done. If the command is there and we've seen the Braves develop pitching, then I ultimately think that Waldrop has that SP1 upside if all clicks right. So I don't normally go pitching this early, but I do think that Waldrop is up here for me. And then, you know, at 9, I'll go ahead and take Tommy Troy as well, who you mentioned. I was in a similar boat. I had Troy and Shaw kind of grouped together like pre-draft, and, you know, Shaw kind of just showed that who he was and that he separated himself. But it's not a knock on Tommy Troy at all. I still really like the profile. He may not be pushed as quickly as Matt Shaw, but I would not rule out a shot that he does get some time in Arizona next year, especially down the stretch. I mean they're in the championship series right now, and there's no reason to think that next year they're not contending again, and Troy's getting a push up to see what he can do. I think there's some sneaky power in this profile that he hasn't really got credit for. He is a bit smaller, but he does make impact and he makes a lot of contact and it's going to play. Like, he's a high OBP type player, good power and speed. I'll be intrigued to see like what the counting stats end up looking like, but I ultimately like Tommy Troy a lot. And think, you know, as an Arizona fan, I'm sure you do as well, Welsh.
I would have taken him. He was an interesting guy, seeing him on the backfields working. I shared the video some while back, but he was working with Orlando Hudson and I had asked him about it after. This is like the second day he had gotten to the Diamondbacks after being drafted. And he was just like, he's like, working with Orlando Hudson is like amazing. You know, he was working defensively there. And I do believe he got hurt a little bit towards the end. It might've been in September. He came back. He was over on complex side and kind of going with that. I would be a little surprised if he did break camp with the Diamondbacks, just simply because of the success they found from Perdomo and they've got to develop Lawler. But I also just wouldn't take anything away from them getting productive bats. And that's one of those guys, when things are clicking, he's going to get going. So I would have taken him. I'm going to stick with another bat because you weren't a homer, by the way. Hurston Waldrop would have been a player had you not taken. I would have swooped up right then. I think you kind of ended a tier here. Little torn with the guy who made the majors, but I'm going to go with a bigger bat. I'm going to go with Brock Wilken.
I hate you so much.
Yeah, I mean, Wilken's an exciting big, big power player, hit 285 and a little over 160 at bats this year. Actually stole some bases as well, hit over 400. Weirdly, I can tell you guys out there, but weirdly, the Brewers kept him here for instructs. And I don't even know if he knew why he was here for instructs. He was the only college bat that stuck around for instructs, I believe, across all of instructs, not just like the Brewers. And he hit a couple homers. He was playing in a few of those days. And, you know, from a college data perspective, I had some of that. Very intrigued, had the third highest max EV of at least some of the players I got, around 119 at Wake Forest. He had a 89% contact percentage on 92 plus with the lowest chase percentage of any of the college play. I don't have the high school stuff, but any of the like top first round college players, at least that I had. And it's incomplete data because I don't have every single bat for like, you know, 500 different players, but of the big stars, we're talking like, you know, Tommy Troy, Shaw, Langford, Cruz, all these guys are in there, had the lowest chase percentage with some of the biggest EVs as well. Like I said, that max EV was 119, higher than Langford, higher than Cruz. I like the approach with the hands in. I think he's got absolutely monster power. It's a good ballpark to go in. This is a pretty easy pick. It's a dream on 30 plus potential home run power. So Brock Wilken, so far, pretty easy draft. It's about to get a lot tougher as we move on. But these picks for me of Shaw, Wilken, and Cruz are definitely a brand.
Yeah, I was really hoping you would go anywhere else besides Brock Wilken, because I absolutely would have went Wilken there. Like, I usually struggle with comps. So I see some Austin Riley there. I think he's going to be an absolute stud bats, and that's the reason why I've had him top 10 since my initial FYPD rankings. I have him eighth right now, right behind, you know, the Jenkins, Clark, Shaw trio right there. So yeah, love that pick. And
you know, one interesting thing I just want to throw in real quick. I thought it was really interesting what the Brewers did. The Brewers sent all their draft picks to Complex, and I think that was like a really good thing of molding these guys together, because those guys kind of revered Wilken. I saw Mike Bovee. I scream about Cooper Pratt a lot. I love him and Eric Batanti. All four of those guys from this draft class all came over to Complex and worked together. I remember when he left, like Bovee and Pratt were kind of talking about him after, like, oh yeah, he just left. And I think it was a good way to kind of build these players together. There's some similar traits in all those guys. Those are all guys that might come up at the same, the Brewers like prospects in the near future. Like, you could have an infield of Wilken, Bovee, and Pratt, and I would not be surprised at all, because I think they're all super talented players.
Yeah, no, that was, Milwaukee absolutely nailed this draft. Like, I think there's no doubt about that. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break before my pick. We'll be right back.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. Welcome back. I am on the clock here. What pick are we at? 10, 11? 11, I think it is. That was a good time for a break because Welsh completely threw me off. I thought I could get woke in there, but I am going to pivot to a guy that I think has lost maybe a little helium. Maybe that's unfair, but I'm going to go with Arjun Namala here from the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, a very exciting prep bat out of the Florida high school ranks here. Very young, just turned 18 not too long ago. And a guy that every time I just watch him, I just get more and more excited about his potential long term. He's a guy that I think can stick at shortstop, assuming he doesn't outgrow the position, which I don't think he will. But obviously, they have some guy named Bo Bichette there. So we'll see how that works out. Maybe he moves over. I don't know where, but wherever he does end up on the diamonds, short, second, third, outfield, wherever, I think this is to be a well-rounded offensive talent. I don't think he's ever going to really stand out in any one area, but if he did, it'd probably be within the power department, depending on how much bulk he does add here over the next couple of years. Maybe he's like a plus or slightly above plus power bat. I think there's a good feel for hit. I think there's at least average speed. So I think this is a guy that could slot, you know, somewhere near the middle of the order and provide you really good production across the board. And, you know, his debut this year, so I'm trying to pull up his stats here. I think didn't he get injured at some point, though, this year? If I recall, did he miss some time? I can't remember. But he only played 9 games, only hit 200 there, but got on base in half of his plate appearances, walked 14 times. It's a very polished, you know, for that age. Actually, he turned 18 today, actually. Happy birthday, Arjun Namala. And so I will take him here at number 11.
All right. This is tough for me. I've got like 3 guys in a tier. I'm going to go with Cole Emerson at 12.
I almost went Emerson there. I was debating him too.
Yeah. I just think he's got such a nice combination of just present skill, youth, projectability, like high floor. I think he's going to show a pretty high ceiling next year. Alex Jensen of Prospects Live was all over Emerson coming out of the draft. And he talked about him a ton on my podcast a few months ago, really sold me on him. And, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, whether it's like the development or just identifying these guys, but I think Seattle just has an excellent track record with this type of player. So Emerson, and then at 13, I guess I'll take Kyle Teal.
You just broke Clegg's heart.
I hate taking catchers, but I think he's just so good. And this was one of my favorite marriages between a player and a team in the draft this year. Just having him in an org where there's just a wide open path to just a ton of playing time as soon as he's ready. Good home park. I just think that landing spot was just really great for him. And then obviously he had an outstanding debut.
Yeah, no, absolutely he did. And, you know, Chris, you know, Clegg saw a lot of him late in the season as well. And yeah, just as a Red Sox fan, you know, putting aside fantasies part of this, I was very excited when we drafted Kyle Teal. Like, I thought he should have gone, you know, a few picks higher than what he did. So when he fell to us, I was very happy with that because with, you know, Vasquez gone, traded him last year. I mean, Connor Wong, you know, he had a decent year and all, but I think he's more of like a solid backup long term. Didn't really have that long term guy in the system, but now we do with Kyle Teal. So I'm very excited that we got Teal. I'm very happy to see him climb up the ranks here towards Boston. I will. This is a very like huge, like glutton of a tier for me. So I can go like 5 different ways, but I really want to draft this guy. So I am going with Noble Meyer, one of the most exciting pitching prospects in this draft, landed in a great pitching development organization that just lost Kim Ong today. But obviously, this has been one of the better pitching development organizations over the last, you know, really the last decade or so. A lot of great homegrown talent on the pitching side of things. And to get a guy with this much talent in an org like this is very encouraging. Big fastball, you know, one of the better breaking balls in the entire 2023 draft class with his slider. And he's shown a feel for a changeup. Hasn't really had to use it too often, but this org obviously has a great track record of developing changeups, especially. So I have all the confidence in the world that he will continue to refine that changeup and make it a solid third offering for him. And, you know, for someone his age, like, he was very polished for his age. You know, it shows better command and control of his arsenal than most high school pitchers, you know, in a draft and, you know, when they debut in the minor leagues. So that's everything you want from like a frontline guy, like Noble Meyer checks that off. Like, there's only a few of those. Probably, I'd say for frontline guys from the draft, you know, frontline potential, it's probably just Skeens, it's Waldrip, and Noble Meyer. I think those are the three names here. So I will happily take Noble Meyer here at pick 14 and back over to Welsh.
That was a tough one. I thought Noble was coming back to me. So that
that's payback for you stepping me on Wilkin.
Yeah, no, I get it. That's definitely the – I mean, Emerson and him were the two guys I was hyper-focused on. So, again, like, I guess in my brain, we've now moved another tier of, like, the first-year player guys we're moving. And I know you guys have both – multiple, like, there's clumps of players and stuff. Just I think we've moved down the talent pool maybe just into the next one. And I'm kind of torn because there's also a couple guys I could choose from here. I think I would make it easy, especially if we're looking at, like, this would be the last pick in a 15 team if we're, you know, getting that out to the audience. I'm going to go with Nolan Chenault. And I think there's a lot to not like about Nolan Chenault. And I don't think we qualify. We didn't get out of the at-bats. So I think we're still in the qualification, correct?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yeah. He's still good. Yep.
I think there's a lot to not like about Nolan Chenault. The exit velocities would be one. The lack of counting stats would be another. The thing that you can hold hope on is this is a guy that's leading off for the Angels, and he's going to probably be put in a predominant role for quite some time. The only bummer is going to be if it's not with Ohtani and Trout hitting behind him. And the hitting streak was ridiculous. You know, from a major league standpoint, he hit 275. We did see the first homer. I do think hyper contact hitters can make that change and can develop power. And if he develops into a 20 plus homer guy, he might be 100 runs. If you hit him three, this might be just one of those goofy guys that has 100 RBI, but maybe has less than 20 homers. I'm going with him because if you're looking at production now to major league talent versus the players that are still out there that I think also come with some risks, that I think I'm comfortable taking Nolan Chenault here, but I'm bummed that you took Noble Meyer on me. So I'll go with Nolan.
Yeah, it does feel like a little bit of a drop off to this point, but I'm going to go with Bryce Eldridge, Giants, two-way. He's just going to end up sticking as a hitter from what we've seen. I mean, he could go two-way, but I mean, he's 6'7", lefty, obviously on the mound and at the plate. He's got a big fastball, slider, and curve, but with the bat, I mean, he was excellent this year. 31 games, he hit 294 with a 400 OBP, 505 slug, 6 home runs. Some of the exit velocities were pretty insane on him. And so this is kind of just a profile that seems like it's a good one to bet on. And I'll take a shot with my next pick. I'm a little bit torn, but I'm actually going to go back to the international well and go with Shota Imanga. Hopefully I'm saying in that right. He's a lefty coming out of Japan. He's been pretty doggone good as well. I mean, he's not been on Yamamoto levels. We're talking about a lefty that's eaten a lot of innings. He gets strikeouts. He has really good stuff. And like from a stuff standpoint, like he graded out like better than Yamamoto in the WBC. So just pretty impressive stuff all around there from Imanaga. I think I'm saying that right. But he's going to come over. He's 30 years old, so he is a little older than Yamamoto. So it's kind of reasonable to think that Yamamoto does go a lot higher in FYPDs. But I also think that Imanaga could be a really good arm in the fastball. 95. It's got 20 inches of induced vertical break, like good movement profile as well. I mean, the stuff plus on it in the WBC was 149, which is pretty absurd in a lot of whiffs. So Yeah, I think he'll come over and be a really solid arm. And if you're a win now team, I think this is kind of a sneaky pick if you don't have an early pick and get Yamamoto.
I'm going to make this one a little bit easier. This is a little bit easier now that we move through that. I'm going to go with a pitcher as well. I'm going to go with Rhett Lauder, who I think is, when you talk about Paul Skenes, I think Rhett Lauder was one of the best college pitchers out there. And actually kind of reminds me of what I'm seeing out here in the AFL with Ricky Tiedemann. And I know people might not be like, what? What are you talking about? Well, you know, Tiedemann has been sitting into like the low 90s with this fastball with just the most absurd changeup. And maybe you could argue it, but best changeup in college baseball last year was Rhett Lauder. And Rhett Lauder throws strikes. That would be the big differential here. So he's a big strike thrower with a big fastball. He's got a slider. The working early changeup has made fastballs so much better and something that really Ricky Tiedemann works well off of and can induce big, big strikeout numbers. I love Lauder. They really babied him. He was out here in instructs. I was told he was supposed to pitch two different times, once in complex and then once in instructs. I don't know. I don't think he ever pitched in instructs. He was working out. He never pitched in complex. They really were being careful with it because I think this is a future ace for their team. Also, the Reds have done some decent stuff with pitcher development and pretty honed in on that. I think that changeup will be elite. I think he will be a big strikeout guy. And he's a command guy, and I'm not dealing with some of the worrisome command stuff. Like I said, like I'm seeing Ricky Tiedemann has this great fastball changeup combination that lacks some serious command issues, and I don't worry about that with Lauder. So I think Rhett Lauder is kind of an elite college pitching option, if that's what you're into, later in drafts. And that's always what's so nice about not investing in pitching early, is there's always fun pitchers to draft later on. So I'll go with Rhett Lauder.
Yeah, he's probably one of the higher floor pitchers, and not just in this draft, like in all of the minor leagues. And I know that's, you know, people out there yelling tin stop, and, you know, as they're listening to this, but yeah, Lauder feels as safe as you can get with the pitching prospect. I feel like this guy's going to be a really good pitcher for a really long time. It's adding more, you know, fun young players to that Cincinnati team in 2024. I'm going to go back to the Florida prep ranks. I'm going to go Aiden Miller, who went 27th overall to the Philadelphia Phillies, who obviously are currently in the National League Championship Series. It didn't hit a home run in his 20 games after the draft, 10 of which at complex level, 10 in low A, but did hit .303 with a .425 OBP. You know, one of the better just pure bats in the, you know, prep ranks in the 2023 draft class in terms of when combining, you know, hits and power. You know, very strong frame. I don't think he's going to really add a lot more bulk to it, maybe a little bit, but not a ton of projection there, but already showing, you know, he's hinted that big time power, you know, projection, maybe, you know, especially in a good ballpark like Citizens Bank is. Yeah, I think this could be a 30 homer bat in time. A guy that hits for a good average, good, you know, provides a good OBP as well. Like he's already showing a pretty solid approach. Yes, very small sample size, 12 walks, 15 Ks, encouraging. And I think he's, you know, it could be a guy that runs a little bit too. Maybe a guy that, you know, he won't give you 20, but maybe a guy that can flirt with double digits annually and beat up to, you know, 12, 13 range some years. Just add a little something there, you know, on top of, you know, the rest of what I just said. So, and I, you know, Philly's obviously going to have a great lineup for the foreseeable future. He'll be up in a couple of years to add to that. Yeah, so I'm pretty high on Aiden Miller here. So I have him, you could take him, you could say he's a top 10 player in this, you know, draft. And I wouldn't have any issue with it. I have him number 12 right now, so I'll be happy to take him here at 19. All right, over to James for 20 and 21.
Okay, I'm going to take Braden Taylor at 20, third baseman for the Rays. You know, on the one hand, I think he struck out a bit more than I think anyone was expecting in his pro debut. It was kind of supposed to be power or hit over power. But on the flip side, the amount of power he showed and the amount of speed he showed, like he's a really good defender. He's a good athlete for a third baseman, 11 for 11 on steals, I believe, to go with the five homers. So if the hit tool is kind of as good as everyone thought over a full season next year, I think what he flashed from a power speed standpoint this year is going to be pretty intriguing. And then, let's see, at number 21, I am going to take another Mariners shortstop, Ty Pete. Kind of same thing as Taylor in many ways, just showed us a really high long-term ceiling from a power standpoint, Big Ten bat speed. You know, he's a really good athlete. I think he's going to be able to steal double-digit bases as well. So it just kind of comes down to the hit tool with him. But given sort of how rusty he was coming into pro ball because of the injury he was dealing with, I just thought it was a really impressive pro debut from Pete. So I think there's upside with both Taylor and Pete, although they did show some swing and miss in their debuts.
Yeah, no, a couple of great picks there. Can't go wrong with those. I've been holding off on this guy. Actually, no, I'm going to continue holding off on him. And I'm going to go to a guy that I am insanely high on and I think is just not getting enough love, you know, in kind of FYPD rankings or in general. And I'm going to go a little bit of a homer here. Not obviously not from the state of Maine, because, you know, nobody's here coming out of Maine. But from my favorite college, and that's North Carolina, I'm going Mac Horvath. 6'1", about 200 pounds, very solid frame. You know, big time power speed production the last couple of years, flirted with 2020 in 2022 in just 300 plate appearances, and then went 24-25 this spring in 292 plate appearances. And he showed a solid approach throughout his collegiate career, 104 walks, 141 strikeouts. And obviously there's plus power speed here. I think if you're ranking guys on just fantasy upside and or fantasy ceiling, I think I might have Horvath top 10. That might be, you know, not popular, but I firmly believe that. And, you know, there are questions about the hit tool, contact skills, but there's not like a ton of swing and miss in the profile here. And I think the contact skills, you know, maybe he won't be a 280 hitter, but I think he'll be fine in that area, enough to hit like 260 or something like that. And if he's hitting around 260 with his on-base ability, then, you know, higher walk rate he's always shown throughout his collegiate career, and even in, you know, in low A and high A, he had a 455 OBP and obviously just 22 games, 5 home runs, 14 steals. So he's already putting all these tools on full display. I think he's going to be a steal. I think if you look at like FYPD, ADP, and, you know, once we have a lot of drafts underway, probably a guy goes outside the top 25, but I have as my number 15 guy right now. So I'll happily take him here at 22.
I'm going to take a guess. Maybe you were holding off on the guy. I'm going to get into the mud. I'm bad performances in their debut doesn't scare me completely off. So I'm going to take Chase Davis here. Chase Davis was a theoretical top five guy coming in, had an absolutely atrocious pro debut where he hit like 200. He walked a ton. Let me pull it up. I think it was he hit 212, and he ended up having a 366 OBP, so like 140 points higher. I think major league pitching was a wake-up call for him. But you want to talk about the beauty and the swing. You want to talk about the amount of pro support on his side of real power, bat speed, and, you know, the goofy Carlos Gonzalez comps that were out there. We also saw him run a little bit early on. It was 100 at bats. I don't personally want to take those 100 at bats and completely throw him away. I'm willing to take the risk that pro debut was maybe a little too much and we can bounce back, because I believe in the tools. I believe in the swing. I believe in that power potential. I believe that there's a 30-plus home run hitter. I believe that swing can generate consistent contact. And part of what might have been some of the struggles is he was staring at a lot of pitches. He was taking a lot of walks. It was very complex-y that he was doing. That's you got to ignore complex-level walks and stuff. So he's falling. Maybe he would have fallen farther. I don't know. I thought maybe, Cross, maybe you might have been alluding to him. But I think this is a general spot that I'm comfortable taking Chase Davis right now, when I thought he would be like a top seven guy coming in.
Yeah, actually, that wasn't who I was alluding to, though. I do have him on my short list here, so was thinking about him. And I keep meaning to bring up where some of these guys went in the mock we did with James back in July. Davis went 5th overall back in July. Yeah, I would have taken him too. I think we all were kind of riding the Chase Davis train back then. So I don't think, obviously, you weren't alone there. But just to allude to some other picks from that draft. So the top 10 of that draft, now that I think everybody from that top 10 has now been taken here. So that top 10 went Cruz, Langford, Skeens, Jenkins, Davis, Max Clark, Matt Shaw, Arjun Namala, Brock Wilkin, and Braden Taylor. were the top 10 there. So obviously some, it was nice to see where some of these guys fell after, you know, 3 months of just kind of, you know, data of performance of just live looks and changing opinions. So, you know, like Waldrop, who went 8 here, went 14 in the previous one. Troy about the same, 11-9. Noble Meyer, 12 was last time to 14 here. Shenwell went 15 in both. Brett Lauder about the same, 17-18. Couple of fallers. Taylor went from 10-20. Aiden Miller from 13-19. And then obviously Davis, the biggest faller, from 5-23.
I still believe in Davis. I mean,
oh yeah, for sure. I think small he's a good buy low.
Yeah, he's a great buy in FYPDs. I mean, I'm not gonna judge him too much on that sample, like Welsh said. I mean, he was a 88% zone contact in college, 9th percentile exit velocity was right up there with Cruz and Langford. So yeah, I think he's gonna bounce back and be fine ultimately. So great buy. I am going to go with Walker Martin, who did not play this year. San Francisco Giants, 52nd overall pick. He's an incredible athlete, one of the best athletes in the class. We're talking a 3-time state champion quarterback, 41 touchdowns his senior year. He was the leading scorer on his basketball team. Like, the kid is absurd. And then he hit 20 home runs in his senior season. Obviously, the competition in Colorado prep competition, not as great, but when you get on base 52% of the time, it's kind of absurd. So Martin, just a freak athlete, and one that I think he's going to be a good value too, because he didn't play. So it's kind of the out of sight, out of mind thing. So I'd bet he goes a lot lower than this in FYPDs. And then I'll take Cooper Pratt as well. Well alluded to earlier. I mean, it's just everything you want to see. Like, he's a big athletic frame, very powerful swing. I think he moves quite well for his size, posted a lot of good run times in high school. And I thought he was pretty impressive with the bat. I mean, I know Welsh, you got to see him live quite a bit. And, you know, I think that he could end up being one of the steals of FYPD drafts, because I think the upside's pretty immense here.
Yeah, I was hoping he would last a little bit longer. That does tell me I need to make sure to lock in this guy. I think the two most underrated bats that at least I got to see were, one, Cooper Pratt, who I noted every single time I saw him, he hit. That was very reminiscent, not to compare them, but of like when we used to see like CJ Abrams and Corbin Carroll, and like those guys would always hit. Cooper Pratt always hits. I'm going to take the other guy that always hits to make sure I lock him in, and I think he's incredibly undervalued, and that's Cole Kerrig. Cole Kerrig with the Rockies in a great home environment. I've consistently moved him up. Catcher coming out, but has played outfield. I don't think I've seen him play catcher in instructs. He played in center field and right field a bunch. 13 stolen bases, 5 homers. He hit 350. He did a decent amount of the damage in the complex, or actually, I guess it was over an A ball. He ended up doing 23 games in A ball, hitting 326. I think he's got an incredibly great approach. He's got a loft to his swing with bat speed. He can absolutely drive homers. He's a big doubles hitter now that's going to generate, I think, into more power. He ended up having 20 extra base hits of his 49 total hits this past year. The dude runs, and he's hitting in Colorado. He can hit at the top of the lineup. That's where the Rockies and Instructs ended up having him hit, was right at the top of the order. I think he's an absolute gamer, big, kind of bigger frame too than you would expect. And if I were highlighting two players that I guess we're going to probably push them up, but we're deeper down list, it would have been Pratt and Cole Kerrig as guys that you need to target.
Yeah, how can you like look at the positions he played this year and just not get excited about that? Like, he played catcher, shortstop, and center field. Like, that just shows like the absolute gamer that he is, and just the athlete that he is. Be great if he keeps like. What do you think the odds are if he keeps catcher eligibility long term?
Not very good. You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I think it was like the first couple games that he was out here, he went to catcher, and then he did go short. And then I think in the outfield, it was a lot more during the instructs, it was a lot more outfield. But I mean, don't take anything away. Maybe they do. But I think he's so athletic, they want to move him around. Maybe it'll be a, you know, multi-position type of player. I'd say it's less likely than likely that he keeps that catcher eligibility. But that also might be on like some of the sites, you know, and where he ends up playing.
Right, yeah, that's fair. All right, I am going to go to the player that I don't know how to rank this guy anymore. Like, I think out of all the guys that kind of like in the top 25-ish area of my FYPD rankings, this has been the hardest one for me to rank, and probably the guy that I've moved around the most. It's because it's a very interesting profile. But I'll go Enrique Bradfield here. You know, obviously, Bradfield is, you know, an elite runner. Like, this guy could just come up and steal like 60 right now. Like, this is elite, elite speed, no doubt about it. And, you know, the OBP skills that were very good in college, you know, 426 OBP in this couple years or a few years at Vanderbilt, and in his limited time last year, or the, you know, this past year in the minor leagues, 110 plate appearances, had a 473 OBP, had 26 walks to 16 strikeouts. Yeah, he's a collegiate guy that was playing. You know, most of that was probably about 2/3 of that was in low A Delmarva. But obviously this guy, the pitch recognition is great. Like, he does not swing and miss much at all. You know, again, he had more walks and strikeouts in college. But, like, where does the power end up? Like, we've seen a lot of these guys that just don't impact the ball a ton, kind of, you know, not kind of fulfill their value, that at least to the level that we hope they do. Is he, you know, a guy that hits, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 home runs a year? So you got, maybe you can get in, like, the 10 to 15 range. I think if he's a double-digit home run guy with everything else he can do, I think there's definitely be some pretty solid value there. But at the same time, you'd be drafting him because you want the speed, obviously. Guy that could be, you know, one of the elite runners in baseball once he does come up in the next year or two. And just, I guess, hope for some power, hope for any power production. I mean, he had 15 in 896 plate appearances in college. He's not like a total zero there, but obviously it's this minimal power upside and projection here. So that'll be the X factor, but at least he's got some solid tools outside of that to fall back on. So again, just draft him for the speed and the OBP and hope that there's at least some power. But I think this was a fair spot for him at pick 27. So I'll take him here.
Okay, so I wanted Carrig here, and then I've got a bunch of guys kind of in a tier. I've gotten hitter with 5 of my first 6 picks, and I think I want to shake it up and get to my top 2 pitchers available. Josh Noth, prep righty with the Brewers, and then Blake Walters, prep righty with the Royals. Both, you know, I like taking these two guys together. I assume one of them's going to break before they get to the majors, if not both of them. But if one of them just stays healthy on his climb to the majors, I think it's a big win. Kind of power and numbers with these two, massive stuff. I think they both have, you know, they have the potential to just shoot up prospect rankings in a full season, you know, big time fastballs, big time breaking balls. Walters is a really good athlete. Noth is going to a really good org for the stuff he throws. So just hoping to go 1 for 2 on these picks here.
Yeah, and like you said, if one of these two guys hits, I mean, obviously the upside is very high with both of them. So yeah, hopefully one of them does, you know, 44th overall pick for Walters to Kansas City and Noth to Milwaukee. Where was Noth taken? 33rd overall. So obviously very high upside for both of them. Yeah, we'll see how they pander out here. Oh, it's me. I forgot. I thought it was Welsh for a second. So with my last pick, I'll go to another outfielder here with intriguing skills. I'm going to go with Dylan Head, went to the San Diego Padres. Another one that I've kind of bumped up and down a lot in my rankings here, but very, like I said, very exciting skills. And obviously the Padres have a pretty solid track record of developing these types of guys. You know, similar to Bradfield, you know, in the sense that, well, that the run tool leads the way here. He's a very good defender as well. And I mentioned that with Bradford. Bradfield's a, you know, very good defender in center field, which Baltimore needs. So I think that will help him get up to the majors. And kind of same thing with Dylan Head. I think there's a pretty good field to hit here. Not quite the runner that Bradfield is, but still, you know, at least like, you know, double plus type of runner. And I think he's got more power potential than Bradfield does, if that's easy to say. Maybe he's only like a 15-ish homer guy, but if that happens along with, you know, everything else he could bring to the table with the speed, maybe like a 40 steal guy, if everything clicks, and guy that could hit you a solid average as well. And maybe he does, you know, develop some more power. We'll see. Obviously still pretty young, has some projection on the frame, not a ton, but if he can just get into like that 15 homer range, which I think is definitely possible, I think he's going to be a very exciting fantasy player. So if you're looking for some upside outside of the top 20 in your FYPD, I think Dylan Head's a pretty solid selection there.
Yeah, I would. That's where I would have gone most likely with this one. It, balancing the safe and like where you can move. I also was like Bradfield was a guy that I was hyper focused on. I probably would have taken back here. I'm going to go with some of the biggest power, I think, out of this class that I've seen at a position I don't love, but I think he'll move to first base. I'm going to go with Ralphie Velasquez with the Guardians, who I got to see a decent amount out here. And I had this really interesting day, too, where it was the Brewers versus the Guardians, and I got to see like Cooper Pratt and Batonte go, and then Cal Manzardo was rehabbing, and Ralphie's here, and you get all these guys, and Ralphie absolutely stepped up and just crushed a ball to right field. It's on my Twitter that you can see, and he had a really great pro debut, hit 348 in very, very limited at bats, but he had two homers in those 23 at bats. Got a stolen base in there. He's a big body guy. Five of his eight hits were extra base. He's listed at 6'3", 215. He's probably around 225. He is a dude. He's an absolute dude. You know what? Kind of reminds me of a younger version of what you dream on with Ivan Melendez. They have like a similar body, but he might be a prettier swing here. I haven't been impressed with Melendez in the AFL. Very impressed with Ralphie. And I think Ralphie's a like a big, huge number four power hitting option that maybe even moves off of catcher in that big frame. So you're going for the moon on power. Give me Ralphie.
It's a good pick. He was actually my next one. I have a couple people ranked higher than Ty Floyd, who I'm going to take. But I think Floyd is just pretty unique in what he does. And I think that he's a pretty underrated FYPD arm. He did throw the fastball 70% of the time at LSU, but the fastball was so absurd that he could get away with it. I mean, you got really fast arm action. He's consistently 95 with 20-plus inches of IVB. It's like an elite fastball. I think the secondaries do need to tick up here. Ultimately, like the changeup is going to be a big sticking point for him as a starter. But we saw down the stretch, I mean, he was pretty nasty when he struck out 10 against Wake Forest, and then in the finals against Florida had that awesome eight inning outing when she struck out 17. So I think Floyd might be the arm to invest in later in FYPDs, because if the secondaries do develop, then I think there's a lot to like here. And Welsh kind of mentioned that earlier about, it was Wilkin that said that, correct? About the toughest hitter or toughest pitcher he'd face being Floyd. Was that correct?
Yeah.
I mean, Floyd, I think Floyd's nasty watching him, and all the metrics kind of back it up as well. So I've heard some good reports from Floyd. There's some good video that some people had posted from Instruct. So I like Ty Floyd a lot. I think that, you know, you can probably get him pretty late in FYPD, but I'm willing to take that shot on him.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty nice arms you'll probably be able to get later in this in FYPDs this year. So it'd be really fun. And, you know, people talk about, obviously, Cincinnati's got this great young like offensive nucleus that they're developing here. But this could be a pretty damn good, or at least has the potential to be a pretty damn good rotation, obviously, with, you know, Lodolo, Green, Abbott, you know, Williamson actually pitched pretty well. Ashcraft up and down. But you know, and then you got guys like Rhett Lauder, Ty Floyd, you know, Connor Phillips. There's so many good pitchers in this org, too. So we might be looking at Cincinnati making a deep run next year. I think next year, you know, maybe they get some of these pitchers back healthy. Maybe you'll see a deep run from Cincinnati like we saw from Arizona this year. But that's going to wrap up our picks portion here. Let's go around the horn really quickly here to close out the show. Maybe, you know, a name or two that you really like that you're going to be targeting. You can go as deep as you want with these names. Just names that you like that you'll be targeting in your FYPDs that we did not take so far. Welsh, we'll start with you.
Lou James, Geno Grover. I love, he's one of those guys I mentioned that pops off on as far as the big, big hard hit numbers and contact rate of what he did in college. There was a system to what the Diamondbacks drafted this year. Tommy Troy, Jack Hurley, and him all popped off with Big Max EV. So they went very analytical in their draft department this year. And I really love Lou James. He's a guy that I'm going to get for a lot of those reasons. I'll just throw two others. George Lombard Jr. with the Yankees. I actually think he's kind of got like a George Springer type vibe to him at shortstop that maybe he moves out. Power speed combo. I saw him at the MLB draft combine. And I really like Tommy White. I like Thomas White, who went to the Marlins, probably one of the better, he's a prep pitcher, but one of the better lefties in the draft. So, you know, if I wanted college, I probably would have gone Dolander. If I want to go huge, huge upside, it's going to be Thomas White. So those are some of my favorites that didn't go.
How about you, James?
Yeah, I thought the two best high schoolers who didn't go were Lombard, who Welsh just broke down, and then Johnny Farmello, outfielder with the Mariners. And then college guys, I thought Yoandy Morales with the Nationals. I was not a fan at all coming into the draft. I'm still kind of pessimistic, but the numbers he put up and the levels he climbed to, I think it just, it warrants taking somewhere in the middle of an FYPD. Colton Ledbetter with the Rays, not an amazing defensive prospect, but I think he's just a really, really good hitter, some power, some speed. I think he could hit enough to stick in left field. And then Joe Whitman, college lefty with the Giants, one of the best sliders in the draft.
Nice. Good names there. Clegg, who you got?
And go with another Mariner. Mariners did really good in this draft. I like Aiden Smith a lot. Prep outfielder they took out of Texas. Big frame, easy power, good athlete. I think he could be a potential power speed threat. So he's one that I really like a lot. George Wolkow, another one, really big frame. A lot of upside here. I know that there was some struggles after debut, but he's a 6'7" lefty who's 17. He reclassified from the 2024 class, high in bat speed, big exit velocities, good athlete. So I think he's one that, you know, I'm looking to invest in later. I think Miles Naylor is also another one. Just there's a lot of blood. There's the bloodlines, obviously, being Josh and Bo's brother. They've both talked about Miles being better than they were at the age, which just speaks pretty highly considering both those are major leaguers now. Naylor, I think, ultimately could end up being a really solid shortstop. He's highly athletic, good run times. And he's shown the ability to post some good exit velocities as well. So those are just a couple that I like a little deeper. So a lot of good names in this draft. I think this draft is super deep, actually.
Oh, absolutely. It's loaded at the top. It's super deep. It's every time I look at this draft class, it's like I like it more and more. And yeah, I think the Naylor family is trying to take over the baseball world here. A couple of names I'll add real quick. I like Jack Hurley a lot. I think he's going to fall in FYPDs because he was taken, I think, like 82nd overall or something like that. Somewhere in the third round in that range. So oftentimes draft slot affects where these guys go. At least to some degree it shouldn't, but it always kind of factors in a little bit. So I think he'll be a good value there. You know, solid power speed blend, decent feel for hits. I like him a lot. And then I'll go a little bit of a homer pick here and go Nazan Zanatello. The Red Sox took 50th overall, shortstop prospect, signed for $3 million. You know, we'll see where the hit tool, that's the question marks are around the hit tool if he can make enough contact. But, you know, good frame, some projection on that frame. A solid defender at short. We'll see if he moves off the position. The Red Sox have a lot of kind of middle infielders, obviously, in their system, including Marcelo Mayer. But, you know, for offensive purposes, you know, the power speed lend projection here is pretty exciting. So, and I feel good about the Red Sox kind of figuring him out. Didn't have the greatest debut, but it was only, you know, 36 at bats. So I'm not going to read too much into that or even at all. So very high upside here was Zanatello. Maybe moves over to third, you know, or out to the outfield, corner outfield. We'll see. But like the upside here, a good amount. But that will wrap up the show. Real quick, we'll go around the horn again. Let everyone know what you're doing, where you can be found, all that good stuff. James, what you got going on over at RotoWire?
Just working on 2024 prospect outlooks. I'm going to fire up the pod, off-season pods once a week starting this week. Follow me on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. Subscribe to RotoWire, rotowire.com/pod for a trial.
If you're not subscribed to RotoWire, I don't know what you're doing at this point. Like, seriously. Welsh, this could go for half an hour with all the places you're at, but where people can find you and all the good stuff you got going on.
Yeah, you just follow on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh, doing a lot of different podcasts. My podcast most prevalent is Prospect One. I think as this will be airing, have a new episode. I've just been breaking down the Arizona Fall League and things that I've been seeing. I want to get a hold of some players just because there's one specific pitcher that I feel like I've found something that I don't know if he knows. And I want to talk about that, but I'm going to talk about it on the podcast. A pitcher that is very highly renowned that is doing some pretty big tipping. But I'm just breaking down the Arizona Fall League. I'm there every single day. And I'm in a lot of other places. And I will tell you, I will be a part of a couple those podcasts that I'm on. I'm still doing like CBS, and there's a little break on Rates and Barrels. But during the First Pitch conference, we are looking at doing live podcasts for both of those shows that I will be a part of. So if people are out here, that could be cool. Times are not set and everything's not completely set. but you can be on the lookout for it for some live first pitch podcasts from Rates and Barrels and from CBS. Me and Frank will be doing those, and I'll just be out doing all the stuff and things. So at Is It the Welsh is the easiest way to find what's going on if you want to.
And you absolutely should want to. Clegg, what do you got going on?
Hey, well, just working through rankings and write-ups. That's kind of my goal this offseason, is to write up every player that I rank in some form or fashion. So put out the top 600 prospects, done top 500 dynasty for OBP leagues, and then top 200 FYPD. All the FYPD write-ups are done. So if that fancies your interest after this episode, you can check it out, the Dynasty Dugout. It's all there. That's pretty deep. I don't know why I did 200. I just landed on 200 FYPD players. So there it is. You can find out a little bit about every player there. So RotoClegg on Twitter, and all the work's pretty much posted there, but most everything's at the Dynasty Dugout. So check that out.
Absolutely. Obviously you can find me ErikCross04, a lot of my stuff over at Toolshed Fantasy. Still doing some writing at RotoBaller right now, a little bit of a break over at FTN until the draft kit comes out. But yeah, a lot of rankings, team prospect rankings, overall rankings, FYPD, player write-ups, working on some 2024 rankings, a lot of fun stuff. So no off season here for any of us, that's for sure. But for Chris Clegg, for Chris Welsh, for James Anderson, I'm Eric Cross. We will see you next time. Everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.